Carlos Castaneda's The Second Ring of Power, Chapter 2, The Little Sisters, Part 1. Donna Soledad seemed to be explaining something to the four women who surrounded her. She moved her arms in dramatic gestures and held her head in her hands. It was obvious that she was telling them about me. I drove up the driveway to where I had been parked before. I intended to wait for them there. I deliberated whether to remain in the car or to sit casually on the left fender. I opted to stand by the car door, ready to jump in and drive away, if something like the events of the previous day were going to be repeated. I was very tired. I had not slept a wink for over 24 hours. My plan was to disclose to the young woman as much as I could about the incident with Donna Soledad, so they could take the necessary steps to aid her, and then I would leave. Their presence had brought about a definite change. Everything seemed to be charged with a new vigor and energy. I felt the change when I saw Donna Soledad surrounded by them. Donna Soledad's revelation that they were Don Juan's apprentices had given them such a tantalizing appeal that I could hardly wait to meet them. I wondered if they were like Donna Soledad. She had said that they were like myself and that they were going in the same direction. That could easily be interpreted in a positive sense. I wanted to believe that more than anything else. Don Juan used to call them Las Hermanitas, the Little Sisters, a most befitting name, at least for the two I had met, Lydia and Rosa, two wispy, pixie-like, charming young women. I figured they must have been in their early 20s when I had first met them, although Pablito and Nesta always refused to talk about their ages. The other two, Josefina and Elena, were a total mystery to me. I used to hear their names being mentioned from time to time, always in some unfavorable context. I had deduced from passing remarks made by Don Juan that they were somehow freakish. One was crazy and the other obese. Thus they were kept in isolation. Once I bumped into Josefina as I walked into the house with Don Juan. He introduced me to her, but she covered her face and ran away before I had time to greet her. Another time, I had caught Elena washing clothes. She was enormous. I thought that she must be suffering from a glandular disorder. I said hello to her, but she did not turn around. I never saw her face. After the buildup that Donna Soledad had given them with her disclosure, I felt driven to talk with the mysterious Hermanitas, and at the same time, I was almost afraid of them. I casually looked down the driveway, bracing myself to meet all of them at once. The driveway was deserted. There was no one approaching, and only a minute before they had been no more than 30 yards from the house. I climbed up on the roof of the car to look. There was no one coming, not even the dog. I panicked. I slid down, was about to jump in the car and drive away, when I heard someone say, "Hey, look who's here." I quickly turned to face two girls who had just stepped out of the house. I deduced that all of them must have run ahead of me and entered the house through the back door. I sighed with relief. The two young girls came toward me. I had to admit to myself that I had never really noticed them before. They were beautiful, dark, and extremely lean, but without being skinny. Their long hair was braided. They wore plain skirts, blue denim jackets, and low-heeled, soft-soled brown shoes. They were bare-legged, and their legs were shapely and muscular. They must have been about 5'3" or 5'4". They seemed to be very physical. They moved with great prowess. One of them was Lydia, the other was Rosa. I greeted them, and then in unison, they initiated a handshake. They flanked me. They looked healthy and vigorous. I asked them to help me get the packages out of the trunk as they were carrying them into the house. I heard a deep growl, so deep and near that it seemed to be more like a lion's roar. "What was that?" I asked Lydia. "Don't you know?" she asked in a tone of disbelief. "It must be the dog," Rosa said, as they ran into the house, practically dragging me with them. replaced the packages on the table, and sat on two benches. Both girls were facing me. I told them that Donna Soledad was very ill and that I was about to take her to the hospital in the city since I didn't know what else to do to help her. As I spoke, I realized that I was treading on dangerous ground. I had no way of assessing how much information I should divulge to them about the true nature of my bout with Donna Soledad. I began to look for clues. I thought that if I watched carefully, their voices or expression of their faces would betray how much they knew. But they remained silent and let me do all the talking. I began to doubt that I should volunteer any information at all. In my effort to figure out what to do and not blunder, I ended up talking nonsense. Lydia cut me off in a dry tone. She said that I should not concern myself with Donna Soledad's health because they had already taken steps to help her. That statement forced me to ask her if she knew what Donna Soledad's trouble was. "You've taken her soul," she said accusingly. My first reaction was to defend myself. I began to talk vehemently, but ended up contradicting myself. They stared at me. I was making no sense at all. I tried again to say the same thing in a different way. My fatigue was so intense that I could hardly organize my thoughts. Finally, I gave up. "Where are Pablito and Nestor?" I asked, after a long pause. "They'll be along shortly," Lydia said briskly. "Were you with them?" I asked. "No," she exclaimed and stared at me. "We never go together," Rosa explained. "Those bums are different from us." Lydia made an imperative gesture with her foot to shut her up. She seemed to be the one who gave the orders. Catching the movement of her feet brought to my awareness a most peculiar facet of my relationship with Don Juan. In the countless times that we had roamed together, he had succeeded in teaching me, without really trying, a system of covert communication through some coded movements of the feet. I watched Lydia give Rosa the sign for horrible, a sign given when anything that happens to be in sight of the signers is unpleasant and dangerous. In this case, me. I laughed. I remembered that Don Juan had given me that sign when I first met Don Gennaro. I pretended not to be aware of what was going on in order to find out if I could decode all their signs. Rosa made the sign that she wanted to step on me. Lydia answered with an imperative sign of no. According to Don Juan, Lydia was very talented. As far as he was concerned, she was more sensitive and alert than Pablito and Nestor and myself. I had always been incapable of making friends with her. She was aloof and very cutting. She had enormous black shifty eyes that never looked straight at anyone, high cheekbones and a chiseled nose, which was a bit flat and broad at the bridge. I remembered her having red sore eyelids and everyone taunting her on account of that. The redness of her eyelids had disappeared, but she continued to rub her eyes and blink a great deal. During my years of association with Don Juan and Don Gennaro, I had seen Lydia the most, and yet we had probably never exchanged more than a dozen words with each other. Pablito regarded her as a most dangerous being. I always thought she was just extremely shy. Rosa, on the other hand, was very boisterous. I thought she was the youngest. Her eyes were very frank and shiny. She was never shifty, but very bad-tempered. I had talked with Rosa more than anyone else. She was friendly, very bold, and very funny. "Where are the others?" I asked Rosa. "Aren't they going to come out?" "They will be out shortly," Lydia answered. I could tell from their expressions that friendliness was not what they had in mind. Judging from their foot messages, they were as dangerous as Donna Soledad. And yet, as I sat there looking at them, it occurred to me that they were gorgeously beautiful. I had the warmest feelings for them. In fact, the more they stared into my eyes, the more intense that feeling became. At one moment, it was sheer passion that I felt for them. They were so alluring that I could have sat there for hours just looking at them. But a sobering thought made me stand up. I was not going to repeat my bungling of the night before. I decided that the best defense was to put my cards on the table. In a firm tone, I told them that Don Juan had set up some sort of trial for me using Donna Soledad, or vice versa. Chances were that he had also set them up in the same fashion, and we were going to be pitted against one another in some sort of battle that could result in injury to some of us. I appealed to their sense of warriorship. If they were the truthful heirs of Don Juan, they had to be impeccable with me, reveal their designs, and not behave like ordinary, greedy human beings. I turned to Rosa and asked her the reason for her wishing to step on me. She was taken aback for an instant, and then she became angry. Her eyes flared with rage. Her small mouth contracted. Lydia was in a very coherent manner, said that I had nothing to fear from them, and that Rosa was angry with me because I had hurt Donna Soledad. Her feelings were purely a personal reaction. I said then that it was time I left. I stood up. Lydia made a gesture to stop me. She seemed scared or deeply concerned. She began to protest when a noise coming from outside the door distracted me. The two girls jumped to my side. Something heavy was leaning or pushing against the door. I noticed then that the girls had secured it with that heavy iron bar. I had a feeling of disgust. The whole affair was going to be repeated again, and I was sick and tired of it all. The girls glanced at each other, then looked at me, and then looked at each other again. I heard the whining and heavy breathing of a large animal outside the door. It might have been the dog. Exhaustion blinded me at this point. I rushed to the door, removed the heavy iron bar, and started to open it. Lydia threw herself against the door and shut it again. "The Nawal was right," she said, out of breath. "You think and think. You're dumber than I thought." She pulled me back to the table. I rehearsed in my mind the best way to tell them, once and for all, that I had had enough. Rosa sat next to me, touching me. I could feel her leg nervously rubbing against mine. Lydia was standing, facing me, looking at me fixedly. Her burning black eyes seemed to be saying something I could not understand. I began to speak, but I did not finish. I had a sudden and most profound awareness. My body was aware of a greenish light, a fluorescence outside the house. I did not see or hear anything. I was simply aware of the light as if I were suddenly falling asleep and my thoughts were turning into images that were superimposed on the world of everyday life. The light was moving at great speed. I could sense it with my stomach. I followed it, or rather I focused my attention on it for an instant as it moved around. A great clarity of mind ensued from focusing my attention on the light. I knew then that in that house, in the presence of those people, it was wrong and dangerous to behave as an innocent bystander. "Aren't you afraid?" Rosa asked, pointing to the door. Her voice disrupted my concentration. I admitted that whatever was there was scaring me at a very deep level, enough to make me die of fright. I wanted to say more, but right then I had a surge of wrath, and I wanted to see and talk with Donna Soledad. I did not trust her. I went directly to her room. She was not there. I began to call her, bellowing her name. The house had one more room. I pushed the door open and rushed in. There was no one in there. My anger increased in the same proportion as my fear. I went out the back door and walked around to the front. Not even the dog was in sight. I banged on the front door furiously. Lydia opened it. I entered. I yelled at her to tell me where everybody was. She lowered her eyes and did not answer. She wanted to close the door quickly, but I would not let her. She quickly walked away and went into the other room. I sat down again at the table. Rosa had not moved. She seemed to be frozen on the spot. "We are the same," she said suddenly. "The Nawal told us that." "Tell me, then, what was prowling around the house?" I asked. "The Ally," she said. "Where is it now?" It is still here. It won't go. The moment you're weak, it will squash you. But we're not the ones who can tell you anything. Who can tell me then? Lagorda, Rosa exclaimed, opening her eyes as wide as she could. She's the one. She knows everything. Rosa asked me if I could close the door, if she could close the door just to be on the safe side. Without waiting for an answer, she inched her way to the door and slammed it shut. There is nothing we can do except wait until everyone is here, she said. Libby came back into the room with a package, an object wrapped in a piece of dark yellow cloth. She seemed very relaxed. I noticed that she had a most commanding touch. Somehow she imparted her mood to Rosa and myself. Do you know what I have here? She asked me. I did not have the vaguest idea. She began to unwrap it in a very deliberate manner, taking her time. Then she stopped and looked at me. She seemed to facilitate. She grinned as if she were too shy to show me what was in the bundle. This package was left by Don Juan for you, she said. She muttered, but I think we'd better wait for Lagorda. I insisted that she unwrap it. She gave me a ferocious look and took the package out of the room without saying another word. I enjoyed Lydia's game. She had performed something quite in line with Don Juan's teachings. She had given me a demonstration of how to get the best use out of an average situation. By bringing the package to me and pretending that she was going to open it after disclosing that Don Juan had left it for me, she had indeed created a mystery that was almost unbearable. She knew that I had to stay if I wanted to find out the contents of that package. I could think of a number of things that it might be in the bundle. Perhaps it was the pipe that Don Juan used when handling psychotropic mushrooms. He had intimated that the pipe would be given to me for safekeeping, or it might have been his knife or his leather pouch or even his sorcery power objects. On the other hand, it might have been merely a ploy on Lydia's part. Don Juan was too sophisticated, too abstract, to leave me an heirloom. I told Rosa that I was dead on my feet and weak from hunger. My idea was to drive to the city, rest for a couple of days, then come back and see Pablito and Nesta. I said that by then I might even get to meet the other two girls. Lydia returned then, and Rosa told her of my intention to leave. The Narwhal gave us orders to attend to you as if you were himself, Lydia said. We are all the Narwhal himself, but you are even more so, for some reason that no one understands. Both of them talked to me at once and guaranteed in various ways that no one was going to attempt anything against me, as Donna Soledad had. Both of them had such a fierce look of honesty in their eyes that my body was overwhelmed. I trusted them. You must stay until Lagorda comes back, Lydia said. The Narwhal said that you should sleep in his bed, Rosa added. I began to pace the floor in the throes of a weird dilemma. On the one hand, I wanted to stay and rest. I felt physically at ease and happy in their presence, something I had not felt the day before with Donna Soledad. My reasonable side, on the other hand, had not relaxed at all. At that level, I was as frightened as I had been all along. I had had moments of blind despair and had taken bold actions. But after the momentum of those actions had ceased, I felt as vulnerable as ever. I engaged in some soul-searching analysis as I paced the room almost frantically. The two girls remained quiet, looking at me anxiously. Then all of a sudden the riddle was solved. I knew that something in me was just pretending to be afraid. I had become accustomed to reacting that way in Don Juan's presence. Throughout the years of our association, I had relied heavily on him to furnish me with convenient pacifiers for my fright. My dependency on him had given me solace and security, but it was no longer tenable. Don Juan was gone. His apprentices did not have his patience or his sophistication or his sheer command. With them, my need to seek solace was plain stupidity. The girls led me to the other room. The window faced the southeast, and so did the bed, which was a thick mat like a mattress, a 2-foot-long bulky piece of, I'm going to spell this, M-A-G-U-E-Y, Magway stock. It had been carved so that the porous tissue served as a pillow or a neck rest. In the middle of it, there was a gentle dip. The surface of the magway, I'm never going to get that one, was very smooth. It appeared to have been hand rubbed. I tried the bed and the pillow. The comfort and bodily satisfaction I experienced were unusual. Lying on Don Juan's bed, I felt secure and fulfilled. An unequal peace swept through my body. I had had a similar feeling once before when Don Juan had made a bed for me on top of a hill in the desert in northern Mexico. I fell asleep. I woke up in the early morning. Lydia and Rosa were nearly on top of me, sound asleep. I stayed motionless for 1 or 2 seconds. Then both of them woke up at once. Lydia yawned and said that they had had to sleep next to me in order to protect me and make me rest. I was famished. Lydia sent Rosa to the kitchen to make us some food. In the meantime, she lit all the lanterns in the house. When the food was ready, we sat down at the table. I felt as if I had known them or been with them all my life. We ate in silence. When Rosa was clearing the table, I asked Lydia if all of them slept in the narwhal's bed. It was the only other bed in the house besides Donna Soledad's. Lydia said in a matter-of-fact tone that they had moved out of that house years before to a place of their own in the same vicinity, and that Pablito had also moved when they did and lived with Nestor and Benigno. What's happening to you people? I thought that you were all together, I said. Not anymore, Lydia replied. Since the narwhal left, we have had separate tasks. The narwhal joined us, and the narwhal took us apart. And where's the narwhal now? I asked, in the most casual tone I could affect. Both of them looked at me, and then glanced at each other. Oh, we don't know, Lydia said. He and Gennaro left. She seemed to be telling the truth, but I insisted once more that they tell me what they knew. We really don't know anything, Lydia snapped at me, obviously flustered by my questions. They moved to another area. You have to ask that question of Lagorda. She has something to tell you. She knew yesterday that you had come. We rushed all night to get here. We were afraid that you were dead. The narwhal told us that you were the only one we should help and trust. He said that you are himself. She covered her face and giggled, and then added as an afterthought, but that's hard to believe. We don't know you, Rosa said. That's the trouble. The four of us feel the same way. We're afraid that you were dead. We were afraid that you were dead. And then when we saw you, we got mad for you not being dead. Soledad is like our mother, maybe more than that. Oh, brother. They exchanged conspiratorial looks with each other. I immediately interpreted that as a sign of trouble. They were up to no good. Lydia noticed my sudden distrust, which must have been written all over my face. She reacted with a series of assertions about their desire to help me. I really had no reason to doubt their sincerity. If they had wanted to hurt me, they could have done so while I was asleep. She sounded so earnest that I felt pity. I decided to distribute the gifts I had brought them. I told them that they were unimportant trinkets in the packages and that they should choose anyone they liked. Lydia said that they would prefer it if I assigned gifts myself. In a very polite tone, she added that they would be grateful if I would do so, if I would also cure Soledad. What do you think I should do to cure her? I asked her in a long silence. Use your double, she said in a matter-of-fact tone. I carefully went over the fact that Don Isolde had nearly assassinated me and that I had survived by the grace of something in me, which was neither my skill nor my knowledge. As far as I was concerned, that undefined something that seemed to have delivered a blow to her was real, but unreachable. In short, I could not help Don Isolde any more than I could walk to the moon. They listened to me attentively and remained quiet but agitated. "Where is Don Isolde now?" I asked Lydia. "She is with Lagorda," she said in a despondent tone. "Lagorda took her away and is trying to cure her, but we really don't know where they are. That's the truth." "And where's Josephina?" "She went to get the witness. He's the only one who can cure Donna Soledad. Rosa thinks that you know more than the witness, but since you're angry with Soledad, you want her dead. We don't blame you." I assured them that I was not angry with her, and above all, I did not want her dead. "Cure her then," Rosa said in an angry, high-pitched tone. "The witness has told us that you always know what to do, and the witness can't be wrong. Who in the devil is the witness?" "Nestor is the witness," Lydia said, as if she were reluctant to voice his name. "You know that. You have to." "You have to. I remembered that during our last meeting, Don Gennaro had called Nestor the witness. I thought at that time the name was a joke or a ploy that Don Gennaro was using to ease the gripping tension and the anguish of those last moments together." "That was no joke," Lydia said in a firm tone. "Gennaro and the Nawal followed a different path with the witness. They took him along with them everywhere they went, and I mean everywhere. The witness has witnessed all there is to witness." Obviously, there was a tremendous misunderstanding between us. I labored to explain that I was practically a stranger to them. Don Juan had kept me away from everyone, including Pablito and Nesta, outside of the casual hellos and goodbyes that all of them had exchanged with me over the years. We had never actually talked. I knew all of them mainly through descriptions that Don Juan had given me. Although I had once met Josephina, I could not remember what she looked like, and all I had ever seen of Lagorda was her gigantic behind. I said to them that I had not even known until that day before, till the day before, that the four of them were Don Juan's apprentices, and that Benigno was part of the group as well. They exchanged a coy look with each other. Rosa moved her lips to say something, but Lydia gave her a command with her feet. I felt that after my long and soulful explanation, they should not still sneak messages to each other. My nerves were so taut that their covert foot movements were just the thing to send me into a rage. I yelled at them at the top of my lungs and banged on the table with my right hand. Rosa stood up with unbelievable speed, and I suppose as a response to her sudden movement, my body by itself, without the notice of my reason, moved a step back, just in time to avoid by inches a blow from a massive stick or some heavy object that Rosa was wielding in her left hand. It came down on the table with a thunderous noise. I heard again, as I had heard the night before, while Donna Soledad was choking me, a most peculiar and mysterious sound, a dry sound like a pipe breaking right behind my windpipe at the base of my neck. My ears popped, and with the speed of lightning, my left arm came down on top of Rose's stick and crushed it. I saw the whole scene myself, as if I had been watching a movie. Donna Soledad screamed, and I realized then that I had leaned forward with all my weight and had struck the back of her hand with my left fist. I was appalled. Whatever was happening to me was not real. It was a nightmare. Rosa kept on screaming. Lydia took her into Don Juan's room. I heard her yells of pain for a few moments longer, and then they stopped. I sat down at the table. My thoughts were disassociated and incoherent. The peculiar sound at the base of my neck was something I had become keenly aware of. Don Juan had described it as the sound one makes at the moment of changing speed. I had the faint recollection of having experienced it in his company. Although I had become aware of it the previous night, I had not fully acknowledged it until it happened with Rosa. I realized then that the sound had created a special sensation of heat on the roof of my mouth and inside my ears. The force and dryness of the sound made me think of the peal of a large cracked bell. Liddy returned after a while. She seemed more calm and collected. She even smiled. I asked her to please help me unravel the riddle and tell me what had happened. After a long facilitation, she told me that when I had yelled and banged on the table, Rosa got excited and nervous, and believing I was going to hurt them, she tried to strike me with her dream hand. I had dodged her blow and hit her on the back of her hand the same way I had struck Donna Soledad. Lydia said that Rosa's hand would be useless unless I found a way to help her. Rosa walked into the room then. Her arm was wrapped in a piece of cloth. She looked at me. Her eyes were like those of a child. My feelings were at the height of turmoil. Some part of me felt ugly and guilty, but again, another part remained unruffled. Had it not been for that part, I would not have survived either Donna Soledad's attack or Rosa's devastating blow. After a long silence, I told them that it was very petty of me to be annoyed by their foot messages, but that there was no comparison between yelling or banging on the table and what Rosa had done. In view of the fact that I had no familiarity with their practices, she could have severed my arm with her blow. I demanded, in a very intimidating voice, to see her hand. She reluctantly unwrapped it. It was swollen and red. There was no doubt left in my mind that these people were carrying out some sort of test that Don Juan had set up for me. By confronting them, I was being hurled into a realm which was impossible to reach or accept in rational terms. He had said time and time again that my rationality comprised only a very small part of what he called the totality of oneself. Under the impact of the unfamiliar and the altogether real danger of my physical annihilation, my body had to make use of its hidden resources, or die. The trick seemed to be in the truthful acceptance of the possibility that such resources exist and can be reached. The years of training had been but steps to arrive at that acceptance. Truthful to his premise of no compromise, Don Juan had aimed at total victory or total defeat for me. If the training had failed to put me in contact with my hidden resources, the test would have made it evident, in which case there would have been very little I could have done. Don Juan had said to Donna Soledad that I would have killed myself. Being such a profound connoisseur of human nature, he was probably right. That's the end of part one of The Little Sisters.